Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Center Stage. I'm Terry Hines, your host. Today's show is about HIV and AIDS and how we can prevent sexually transmitted diseases. To parents who may have children that are in the room, if you feel this subject matter is inappropriate for their age, I would say to you at this time it probably is an excellent time to tell them to leave the room. My guest today is Ed Jones. He's a behavioral intervention specialist. He's an HIV activist against the spread of HIV. He's an educator, a speaker, and he works with the U.S. government's cross-promotional committee. Welcome, Mr. Jones. How are you?
I'm doing great this evening. How are you?
Great. You know what? This is a subject matter that has been dear to my heart for a long time, and it's something that I'm very excited to talk to you about today. I just a moment ago said to parents that if they had kids that they felt were too young for the subject matter, that they should ask them to leave the room. Do you think that there is a certain age that's appropriate for children to be introduced to this subject matter, or how do you feel on that?
Technically, I believe that if a child is old enough to ask the question, the child should be given proper information. We have children as early as 8 years old who are beginning to ask questions about HIV, AIDS, or either other sexual transmitted diseases. My recommended age limit is if they're old enough to ask the question, please tell them the truth. We don't want a third party instructing our children either with false information or want to use them as an example. That's an undercover case of child abuse, either mentally or physically, because we refuse to provide them with information ourselves.
Okay. So I understand that there are state agencies that a child can go to and be tested as early as age 13 without parental consent. Is that the case?
Yes, ma'am, it is.
Wow.
That is the case, and you have true and accurate information. That's all across the state of Texas, because you even have some children that are infected sexually at that earlier age. Now, we have a very few that are born as a 2% to the infection or to become infected because the mother did not go to prenatal care and used a midwife or something like that. But by law, they are checked for syphilis and HIV in prenatal care and all the other sexual transmitted diseases as a mother of childbearing age who is pregnant.
Well, let me ask you this. If my child, God forbid, were to go to an agency and be tested for HIV and AIDS, and they were to be found positive, what would the agency do at that point? Would they give that information directly to the child, or what would happen?
There's a formal procedure that's recommended by the state. Now, they have people who specialize. All the counselors are not trained to test children. So you have to be a specified trainer. If that agency does not have one, they're usually recommended to your county seat, regardless of what county you are in the state of Texas.
Gotcha. Let me ask you this. Once the child has been told, I'm assuming, you know, the proper person is going to tell the, not the child, they're going to bring the parent in, correct?
Correct. There's a procedure. Let me try to do the best I can.
Okay.
Immediately, CPS is not called immediately.
Okay.
First, the counseling has to go. We're not for sure if the child is being raised by that parent or by another brother or sister, sibling, aunt, or uncle, or take, for instance, the mom or dad or both may be in prison.
Okay.
Granny may be passed away, so this may be a friend of a family who's raising that child.
Yeah.
And who really doesn't care, just keeping the child there, keeping the child from going to foster care until that parent is released.
Okay. So child goes into the agency, or for God forbid the child is positive, then the child is not given the information directly. The child is whoever the guardian of the child is brought in, and then the child is told that they have the virus or have contracted full-blown AIDS. And so at that particular time,
let me hold you off like this. Excuse me, may I? Full-blown AIDS will not be detected from the very beginning unless the child has been 8-9 years with the virus. Okay.
Okay. Okay. So one person who has full-blown AIDS cannot have sexual contact with a person who is not currently infected and give them full-blown AIDS.
No, that's correct.
Okay, gotcha.
That person will have HIV first.
Okay, so the person, no matter who they have sex with, whether that person has full-blown AIDS or not, they can only contract the virus from that person. They won't contract full-blown AIDS.
Well, let me try to help break this down or a little simpler for our listeners also.
Okay.
Say, from the first beginning, HIV, let me tell you what it stands for, human immunodeficiency virus.
Okay.
Now, AIDS is acquired immune deficiency syndromes.
Okay.
That means after a period of time, you begin to pick up opportunistic infections, say maybe the pneumonia or any of the other diseases that go along with opportunistic infections to help deplete your immune system faster.
Okay.
And in the terms we say, you begin to show signs and symptoms.
Okay.
People, you can walk around. You probably work with somebody or have an associate. You'd be surprised. People don't look like they looked back in 1980.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the problems they have now, the medicine is so good. Some of the people who are HIV positive are obese.
Okay.
There's a report given out last year that says 8 to 15% of the people who are HIV positive are obese.
Okay, I can understand that. Well, let me go back to, before we leave this subject, children. How do you, or what do you feel is the cause that children are getting infected at preteen or teen ages? How can that be happening? What's going wrong with that scenario that they're getting something that serious, a sexually transmitted disease is that serious that early on? What's happening?
Restricted information.
Okay.
Restricted information.
Okay.
And when I say restricted information, even the schools, the churches, and people at home refuse to tell the children the truth about basic morals, how to protect themselves from sexual transmitted diseases. As they used to tell us, you don't need to know about the birds and the bees, but I never had sex with birds or bees.
Okay? I can go there.
So there's the thing. Now, children are so advanced, not agencies, or limited, such as the public school systems, and it's been taboo with our church societies, the YMCAs, and the other community places, is to teach them the facts. If they're going to practice sex,
okay,
abstinence should be the first thing you offer. Offer no sex. But however, if they're going to do it, you need to tell them the safest way to be safe if you're practicing.
Okay, then that leads into my next question. How often should a person who's sexually active be tested for HIV?
Well, let's say I'll give you an example. Today is May 1st.
Mm-hmm.
You come in anywhere, any agency, and we'll just say any agency, and you test. While you're testing at this particular agency, you just had unprotected sex 10 days ago with somebody who's positive.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to show in your test today.
Oh. So
the recommendation is for you to come back within another 90 days.
Okay. So
you have what you call a serial conversion period. The serial conversion period is 90 days. Okay?
Okay. So every 90, if you're sexually active, you should be tested every 90 days?
Well, let me finish where I was, and I did cut off, and I'm so sorry to you and to the audience.
Okay.
First test, if you had unprotected sex less than 90 days,
mm-hmm.
The test you're taking now is just an initial test.
Okay.
The second test should be in the second 90 days, because if anything is missed from that period on, then it will be able to be detected. Those tests test for what you call the antibodies. When you take a test, and once it's found, then you have to do what they call a confirmation test.
Mm-hmm.
The confirmation test, when they take a second round of blood draw, to review it, to use the ELISA and the Western blot test to actually give it a confirmation.
Okay.
During your initial screening, we call that a screening,
mm-hmm.
where they're only detecting the antibodies.
Okay.
If antibodies are found, then you're asked to come back to be reexamined again.
Okay. Did I understand that there's a test out now that they can detect the infection after 28 days?
Yes, there is. And now, I fought myself for not having the data with me before me where I can share it with you in the audience, but there is a specific test that can detect as early as 28 days. I understand Dallas County Health Department is using that test. One of the only major cities in Texas is using it.
So it's not something that the person can go and get over the counter. It's not available.
Not on the counter. It's not an over-the-counter situation, no matter.
Okay. Okay. Let me stop right here and say if you want to weigh in on this subject, you can call us at 347-850-8390. Again, if you'd like to weigh in, the number is 347-850-8390. Okay. So what is it that we can do to prevent the spread of AIDS ourselves? Say today, maybe we've been reckless in the past, but, you know, we've been lucky, you know, and for whatever reason we haven't contracted the virus. What can we do to make certain we don't?
First of all, know your status.
Know your status, okay.
Know your personal status. Know that you are not infected.
Okay.
Because it's a taboo to most of the, I would say, socially working people to say, I don't have it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A lot of people look at their income, the departments of where they work, or the area of town in which they live, or even the church in which they go to. You would be surprised. Oh, I go to such a church. Nobody in our church has that.
Okay.
That's for the smaller churches. They call them hood churches. That's for the hood churches. Some of them probably got it. Not knowing that probably a percentage of your congregation in your mega church is in Texas.
Okay.
They come there to hide out.
Okay, so first I need to know my own status. Then what?
Know your own status, number one.
Number one.
Second, after knowing your status, before you sleep with anyone else, make it a ultimate factor with your own morals that you would have to know that person's status.
Okay, so I'm going to know my status, then I'm going to know my partner's status.
By all means.
Okay, and then what do I do?
Then you guys learn the protection. Understand now at this point, we're both safe. We understand this. But I still suggest that you use condoms.
Okay, okay. So
and
I
when
know
I say know your status, I don't want you just to just check for HIV. Syphilis is running rapid in Texas, okay?
Okay.
We'll just take Dallas, for instance. Dallas is number one in the state for syphilis.
Okay.
Well, how many of us have a Metroplex relationship?
How many what?
People have Metroplex relationship. Girlfriend lives in Arlington, a boyfriend lives in Fort Worth, another one lives in Dallas or Plano or something like that. So therefore, we don't draw the line to say because I live in one county and they have an encounter. We have a lot of people who cross lines.
Okay, okay.
I'll give you a stat for right now. We'll just look at something. This was released showing the 2009 versus 2010. Dallas County, 2010, had 98 cases. I'm sorry, 2009, there were 98 report cases. As of March.
As of March of 2009.
No, that was 2009 total.
2009, okay. Only 98 cases were reported in Dallas County.
Correct.
Okay. I would think that number is low. I don't know
okay,
why, but
well,
I would think it's low.
Let's look at it now. But 2010, as of March, you had 191 cases reported.
Okay. So it's on the
rise. We're up 95%. Okay.
Okay. Well, then that leads into another question. When we're hearing all these different statistics on who has AIDS and, you know, what group is got more than the other group, is it statistics versus case reporting, or what are we dealing with?
I would guess we go with case reporting.
Okay.
Publicly.
Okay. And why?
By law, they're supposed to report, even if you're with your private doctor.
Ooh.
All the CBOs always report their counts to the state and also to the county in which they practice in.
Mm-hmm.
Do the blood draw.
Hmm.
The problem is reported cases and people actually being tested is two different things.
Hmm.
If I take the concentration on testing, let's say in Como, I use that for Fort Worth.
Mm-hmm.
I use South Dallas for Dallas. Well, and that's all my concentration in testing is the agencies are only testing in those communities. Well, let's go to Northwestern and Hills. How often are they tested?
Okay.
Okay.
So when I'm hearing on the news that they say that right now that the biggest group with AIDS is black females that are heterosexual, how am I to know that that data is accurate?
Okay, let me first back you up. Let's start with, let's clear the term AIDS.
Okay, I'm sorry, HIV or AIDS, I'm sorry.
HIV is for the newfound cases.
Okay.
AIDS is the disease after a person who has had HIV and their immune system has depleted or their CD4 count has dropped so low they're no longer classified as a HIV person.
Wow. Okay, I would have thought that when we got the numbers, those two would be linked together, not separately.
Definitely separate.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. That I did not know. So then tell me this. How do you feel that we went from, in the 80s, AIDS being known as a gay white male disease to now it being considered a heterosexual black female disease? How could we, in this period of time, jump from this to that?
Social racism is something ridiculous in this whole country.
What is?
Social racism.
Okay, social racism. Okay, gotcha. And how does that factor in?
Let me kind of to make that clear without sounding harsh. First of all, a virus does not select a group of people itself.
Mm-hmm.
A virus is attacking the humans alone, period. So therefore, when you go to record the number of cases, just like I explained, when the testing is concentrated on African-American or Hispanic communities or poor and low moderate income people, those people are going to be the ones affected. They don't have doctors, so they got to go to public health.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them do. I'm not saying that they don't, but a lot of them use the public health, the free testing drives. I work with a couple of free testing drives. In our community, we go around in areas where we know they don't have access to health
mm-hmm.
or access to be tested. So it would be different to go, I guess, is River Oaks in Fort Worth?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So can we imagine sitting up in River Oaks for testing? Do you think they would ask us out?
Do I think they would do what?
Ask us to leave.
Probably.
Okay. But if we go to stop six, we're going to have a line of people up trying to see what's going on. They're going to get tested.
Okay.
They more or less will use their private doctors or say it doesn't exist because of their income. Miss, it's something serious. I don't look like I have it. That's what some of them say. You got to be skinny. You have to be looking like a term Ethiopian-style person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just the local ghetto terms that they use or racist terms that they will use. You have to look like your belly is swollen, your eyes are stuck, and you have no structure for face.
Hmm.
No.
So AIDS what you're saying is AIDS does not have a specific look that we can look at someone and just say, you look like you got AIDS. That's just not happening.
It's not happening. That's not so. We're going to stick with HIV now.
Okay, I'm sorry. And audience, listen, Mr. Jones has corrected me many times, and I apologize. He said that basically I should be seeing HIV virus, which is referring to the virus, and not AIDS, which is the full-blown infection, because there is a difference. And most people are infected with the HIV status. Well, they are infected with the HIV status first. And so I apologize. You are correct, Mr. Jones. You have corrected me many times, and I'm gonna get it correct. I think there's been so many myths that I have been one that has been following the myths and thinking that, you know, pretty much they're all in the same basket, and they are totally not. HIV and AIDS are totally separate.
I am so happy that your voice on the earth is willing to correct that, because there are a lot of voice personalities who make terms such as the ninja, that thing. You know, no, we need to call it by identifying by its proper name.
What it is. Let me ask you to elaborate to the audience what we discussed on yesterday. Mr. Jones was telling me about a case in which there was a survey done or some statistics that were reported that they said 68% of all African-American women had the virus, and you found that to be what? Was that true? Was that a myth, or was that?
Well, let me explain it to you. The writer left out some of the most important information, and that was out of 127,000 African American women across the United States, not the entire population.
Hmm.
So when they leave out quotes and lines or the actual facts to try to scare somebody without giving them a solution, I think that's wrong too.
So you think that when they put that information out there, it's intentional, not just by mistake that they only did it with 127,000, but gave the impression that it was across the board with the entire black female race?
Yes, ma'am.
Ooh, okay. Speaking of groups then, what type of numbers are we hearing in terms of what group is most affected by the virus? Is it Hispanics? Is it blacks? Is it Caucasians? What is it?
We still carry the flag.
Okay, so African Americans are still carrying the flag.
Let me share this with you, and hopefully the next time when I have an opportunity to speak with your audience, I can give them some recorded stats according to the statisticians who collect this information.
Okay.
They claim the MSM, African American man, between the ages of 14 and 24, or a rising number with the newly found cases of HIV among the homosexual community. Then you add that with the African American female as a total, plus the, as we call it, down low brother, we add all those three factors together, then the Playboy-style heterosexual who practices unsafe sex everywhere he goes, we add these four components up that give us our largest increase of numbers.
Wow. So,
it's not just a female. When we look at the body, let's look at the call of people of color. Now, in addition to that, let's take a set of people from different countries from the continent of Africa. When they come to America, they're considered as black. Take the Cubans who are dark-skinned, or the Brazilians who are dark-skinned, or the Puerto Ricans who are dark-skinned. They add them all up, so that makes our numbers high. They won't allow them to separate themselves and identify them as a separate party. So as you add up the whole party of being black, people from other countries who are registered or as a citizen or are found to be infected as they visit here on their visas to work, they add them in with the black folks of America who were born here.
See, I find that hard to believe because, you know, Caucasians come in all kind of different shades. And so I can see people that are migrating over here that may be of lighter complexions, I mean, in terms of appearing to be white in their features, I can't see why they wouldn't be lumped into the category with the Caucasians. So
no, because they're able to break themselves down as Italians,
okay,
British, Russian, German. But us as a people, we've never been able to separately identify ourselves here in this country.
Well, then let me ask this. What group are we seeing that is most shocking in terms of, and when I say group, I mean age group, that we're seeing that are contracting the virus? I mean, are some of the ages just surprising when you see?
At 14 to 24 and at 25 to 40.
Okay, 13 to 13. Oh, my goodness. Okay, that said, what about the senior citizens that are coming up with?
The people over 50 are, their numbers have risen by 15% in newfound cases of HIV/AIDS. Some of them have carried the virus so long when they are tested, they're so close to the being real ill. I don't want to use a lot of technical terms to confuse the audience, because they have to go to immediate treatment for someone who's carried an infection for quite some time.
So, well, okay, I guess I'm surprised. What is the oldest, like, person that you've known that is, like, currently has been infected with the virus?
Well, let me share a story with you that I still carry with me. It's about a three-year-old story,
mm-hmm.
Okay? I work at an agency called AIDS Arms for the record.
Okay.
But at the time, when we go out to do different festivals, there are a number of people who test, like Harambe Fest or Kwanzaa Fest or anything of those natures, there are a number of people. Not to say that this particular person was from my agency. I would like to make that clear. But an associate of mine shared some information with me from another agency, and I also had an opportunity to meet the person.
Uh-huh.
He was so sober when he tested. He said, man, I need help. I don't know how to do the counseling part on this. There were three women, which is three generations, the mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Great-granny was 92. I don't remember the age of mom and the daughter, but the story is she told us the story that she was married to the same man for 60 years.
60 years, okay.
Never had sex with any other person.
Okay.
As it went on to find out, her husband had been dead for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
She was still self-sufficient, drove, took care of her own self, was well, well kept. Her daughters and granddaughter talked to him to find a boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
boyfriend was 70 years old, so you can imagine she felt like she really had it going on. Never had any sexual transmitted diseases after being married to her previous husband for 60 years, thinking that the guy who was 70 was just as clean. Out of the three, she was the only one to test positive. She was 92 years old.
Wow. And most people would have thought that the 92-year-old didn't even need to take the test.
And today, some of them feel like they don't, but they are sexually active. Some of them are still sexually active.
So if an audience member is having sex with someone, say, 60 or 70, don't be fooled that that person could not possibly be carrying the virus, correct?
Let's pump the numbers up. Let's even add 80 or 92, okay?
You're at 90 even, okay. Okay, so I guess the worst myth would be to believe that someone is too old to have the virus.
Too old or too clean.
Okay, no such thing.
No such thing.
Okay, so if she's shaped like Beyonce and looking like Halle Berry, still.
Hurry up and call somebody for help. Okay? Hurry up, because she, first of all, know your status and know your partner's status, no matter how old they are, how much money they make, how big the bank is, how well they look.
Okay.
Sometimes that is the throwout.
Okay.
Smell good all the time, never out of order.
Okay.
Always clean.
So clean. See, a myth would be that you can wash AIDS off, because no matter how clean you are, you can't wash that stuff off.
You can't wash your blood out of your body.
Okay, can I wash the blood? Okay, let me ask you to tell us what the High Five Club is.
If you imagine the term H, look at the word HIV, take the H and the I, put a hyphen between it. That means that they're proud of being members of the HIV Club. They're letting you know. If you meet somebody, they might socially let you know, casually, look, I'm a member of the High Five Club. And it's stated so casually that you don't really pay it any attention, so you don't really want to just discuss it. So you might think it's a really sophisticated club, but that person has technically identified themselves as being positive.
So don't be intimidated because you don't know what it is. They're not saying the Mile High Club. They're saying the High Five Club.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And there is a difference.
A big difference. That person is positive with HIV.
And so basically when they approach you that way, they're assuming that probably you are as well.
Not necessarily. They're clarifying themselves. So just in case if they still practicing unprotected sex, they told you. You didn't ask no questions. They was honest up front.
You just didn't understand what they were talking about.
And just was too stupid to ask the question.
Okay. So then,
and I hate to call anybody stupid. Let me rephrase that. You just didn't want to feel like you were asking an appropriate question to someone who had just told you something. So you want to feel like you know everything.
But typically I would think that if someone were to say to me, you know, are you a member of the High Five Club or I'm a member of the High Five Club, I would think they wouldn't open that up in conversation number one, that they probably would feel pretty comfortable with me in order to tell me that. I wouldn't even...
Well, a lot of them are so smooth in conversation, they let you know up front so that question won't come up, are you positive?
Okay.
And if it does come up, if you have unprotected sex that particular night, and it's a questioning back, and you want to file a claim or bring it to be publicly known, then the business is, I told you.
You just weren't listening.
Exactly. Okay. I told you.
Okay, so then... there's the High Five Club, and then there's the Bug Chaser. So what does the Bug Chaser do? What is the Bug Chaser?
The Bug Chasers became real popular, I would say, 8 to 10 years ago, and they're still active now.
A while back, people who were positive, there were people who
were positive. They wanted care, special care for medical and all of that.
Okay.
So they would look for somebody who was HIV positive and have sex with them, unprotected sex, in order that they could get treatment or assistance.
Okay, because your phone muffled for just a second there, I'm going to ask you to repeat exactly what you just said.
Okay, there were, is this better?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay, you have people, had people who are homeless people.
Homeless people, okay.
And were tired of being homeless, and they figured if they would get with somebody who was positive, or people who were financially strapped and were just tired of struggling, and they were seeing that people were still living with HIV, they were going to go and have sex with someone with HIV in order that they may become positive to get some of the assistance.
Wow. I mean, so that would be just like, I'm sorry, the ultimate dumb thing to do.
Yes.
Okay. So.
Well, I would say people who accept it socially, again, I hate to call people stupid or dumb, so I like to retract it on my part. Okay. This was their only way out, and it became socially accepted.
Okay.
So people have a peer pressure. Let's say peer pressure. I've seen my peer do it, so he's okay. Now he has an apartment. He looks a lot better. He's got medical care. They're looking out for his liver condition that he had along with being positive. Or they're helping him with his heart condition. You know, because you can have HIV or AIDS with any other condition.
Okay. Okay, so transitioning from the bug chaser who's looking for a house to stay in because he's homeless, let's look at the person who's recently incarcerated. Okay, he's about to get out, and he doesn't have a place to stay. And so that brother has been incarcerated and maybe in there with, I'd say he was probably Tarzan by day and Jane by night, just being real. And so then he comes out, and he's back into the free world, and, of course, he's all heterosexual then. And possibly could have contracted the disease inside the prison system. I don't know if that brother will necessarily get out without a place to stay and then tell his last girlfriend or whoever's going to take him in that he's positive.
Well, I want you to listen to this very carefully and to all the audience. There's no one, male or female, can be released from the Texas Department of Criminal Justice system without knowing their status. And their status is whether they're positive or negative for HIV.
So is your job, if you're going to bring them into your home and have sex with them, to ask what was the result of that test before they released you?
Where is the paperwork? Because they're going to do the paperwork. It costs a dime, okay?
Okay.
To get a copy.
Okay. Okay. So you should not just believe him. You should actually, or her, you should actually want to see the paperwork for yourself.
Your taxpaying dollars is paying for it, too.
Okay.
There's no one. Ultimately, no one that is released from the system without knowing. And when they're released, they're given 10 days of medication. That's it. And if they follow through with the procedures that they're given, then they're given 30 days in order to get with the case management and to get medical care. Now, my agency is one of the number one agencies, along with several other agencies in the state of Texas, to offer case management, more or less a one-stop shop. We also even own our own clinic.
But don't you think, and I'm just going to speak for the black community, because I'm just going to speak for what I know. Don't you think that most black females, when they have either a boyfriend or a spouse that has been incarcerated, when he gets out, they don't ask any questions, or they don't ask enough questions about what could have possibly happened while he was incarcerated. Therefore, so if you turn your head, it's somewhat on you.
You are responsible for yourself, okay? It's known that the first 48 hours, people who are released are going to have sex with somebody, basically, a large percentage.
Okay, 48 hours. They're going somewhere.
Somewhere.
Okay. Okay, that's say it. How would you say to a sister or whoever that may have a mate that has just been released, how would you suggest that they ask that question?
Direct. See, first of all, number one, we sugarcoated it so long in our community. Look at the infections we have now.
This is true.
Okay. He's built. He's been working out. He don't have nothing. Excuse me?
Yeah.
He didn't bring the papers home to prove to you that he doesn't have anything. And those papers are new. Matter of fact, they're very new. They're not going to be two-year-old papers. They're going to be less than 45 days.
Okay. So we know that he may, because we know if he was within the system, and let's just say early on they detected that he had HIV or AIDS, they would have treated him the entire time that he was in the system.
Yes, ma'am.
So that means that he's probably going to come out looking pretty healthy. So with the meds available today, a person doesn't necessarily have to look like they have it. We discussed that part. But if a person comes out and they can't afford those very expensive meds, I'm assuming they're expensive if you don't have a job, to come out and then all of a sudden be responsible for your own medicines, I don't think that person, if they can't afford them, is going to probably be taking them. So,
well, let me explain this to you. A person who's coming out already know, because they have people inside the system who are nurses,
mm-hmm.
who handle their cases, who give them the access to get the resources they need.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
The question I was leading into is then, if you are on the meds, from what I'm understanding, and then you get off the meds, then you're throwing your system into chaos. Is that not correct?
That is so correct.
Okay.
You're putting yourself in a position to where you may be resistant to that psychomedication that may be fit for you, and you may only have three brackets that may be fit for you, so now you're only good for two.
Okay. So people are under this assumption that, you know, you can live forever with these meds, and I don't believe that's true. I think you can live a longer life, but not necessarily forever, because eventually the system is going to break itself down. Is that not correct?
A percentage of the people die from something else other than the HIV infection when they're taking their medications and being adherent to what the doctor has recommended.
Okay, so most people die from complications of AIDS or HIV, not necessarily the virus or the full-blown AIDS.
Now, let me kind of separate that for you, okay? I may die from a liver failure,
mm-hmm.
but there wasn't the complication from HIV.
Okay.
Okay, I could have a heart attack.
Well, couldn't that have been due to the disease itself or the virus itself actually breaking the system down?
You may have that ailment even before becoming infected.
Okay.
Some people have heart conditions prior to getting infected, or liver conditions prior. Let's say lung problems prior to your infection.
Okay. What is the longest case known of someone living with the virus or full-blown AIDS in terms of years? How what's the life expectancy of someone?
I'm going to go with an I statement. I have met one person who claimed 31 years.
31 years.
Two for 28 years, and a number of people over 20 years.
Wow.
That number 21 to 25 is a very high rate right now of people who live with them. And you can see them, they're living a normal life, going to work every day.
Okay.
Doing what they're supposed to do. They cut the drinking and the drugs out, no cigarettes. A lot of them have a nutritionist to let them know what they should be eating. And after you learn your business and exercise your body, you can live a while and look good.
Okay, but we do know that with the virus, there's what you call opportunistic infections.
For people who have AIDS.
Okay, for people who have AIDS. Okay.
Yes, ma'am. That's where the opportunistic infection is, where you start to see the signs of the deterioration of the body or the continuous cases of pneumonia or KSs, where the skin looks like it's starting to rot away. That's you start to see those things.
Okay. And so with that, a lot of times people don't know that when you have the virus or you have full-blown AIDS, that there's other sexually transmitted diseases that are going on at the same time in the same body.
If you're practicing unsafe sex without protection, they're still susceptible to gonorrhea, chlamydia, syphilis, okay? Those are some of the main bacterials. Then you're all herpes and the other things. The body, the HIV does not stop you from catching other sexual transmitted diseases.
Hmm. Okay, so we're back to protecting ourselves. Is it true that in certain neighborhoods they may be selling condoms that maybe are outdated?
I would recommend when you are going to your neighborhood store and that box looks like it has dust on it or he has to reach so far up, look at the date on it.
Okay. Sometimes they may have not checked it themselves, but it's your responsibility to know that you're using a condom that is in date, you know, for...
There's an expiration date on a condom just like there is on a box for a carton of milk.
Okay.
And I
hope that resonates with all the listeners that you definitely need to check the date on those condoms.
And look at the package. If that package is brittle and hard, don't buy it.
Okay.
Go somewhere else and buy it.
Okay, go to a place that has a high turnover for that product.
Right. Go to because there is, it's known factor. Condoms really just don't sell in the hood.
Okay, Okay. Not like malt liquor, huh? Okay.
Not like malt liquor at all, or cigarettes.
Okay, gotcha. So when a person says I'm married and I only have sex with my husband, so why would I need to be tested? What would you say to them?
Well, who else did your husband have sex with?
Ooh, back to knowing your partner.
That's from knowing your partner, knowing who you sleep with.
In this
see, a lot of these heterosexual with that quickies at lunch. Let's have lunch at sex at lunch.
Mm-hmm.
That means you're not late getting home. You're on time picking him or her up. But you don't know what the partner you're having sex with because she looks good or he looks good, and they knew. We don't know what those people been doing, but you want to be the first to hit her or knock him off, either or.
Hmm.
So
okay.
We have a social races for sex now.
Hmm. We have what?
Social races for sex.
Okay, what does that mean?
In other words, you got your little group of guys who say, man, I'm knocking her off. No, nah, dog, I'm going to get her best bet.
Hmm.
Okay?
Okay, okay.
So whoever has sex with her first just won that. Or whoever has sex with him first just won.
Okay.
I mean, you're going to take me to lunch or take me out for drinks or whatever the bet may be.
Okay. I understand people use this phrase, there is no safety in thinking you know the other person's history.
Elaborate. Unless you, let me share this with you. And I'm going to share with the entire audience. You only know yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You may have a great understanding of someone else, but you only know yourself. And some of us really don't know ourselves or our limits, especially if we don't practice morals.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Take for instance, he or she just got angry at home. So one of the ways they figure they're going to get back with their mate, they're finna go have sex with the first person, let them have sex with them. Well, you probably seen that too. You're from our community.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
One of your homeboys might say, man, I'm tired of her. She always accusing me of doing something with somebody. I'm finna go do something with somebody tonight, even if I have to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And vice versa with the female.
Okay.
I'm tired of him accusing me.
Okay, okay. So, speaking of, like, okay, people dating, if a woman meets a man today and she likes him and he likes her, like you said, because she doesn't know his history and he doesn't know her history, and maybe people aren't always going to be honest with what their history is all about anyway, what is an acceptable amount of time that should last between meeting that person and having sexual contact with that person?
Until both of you get tested, even if it's a year, if it takes that long, don't do nothing.
Oh, ouch.
I mean, I'm so for real, because never let down your guards because you have a emotional feeling right now.
Hmm.
That go for male or female.
Hmm.
Or, man, she's just going to be in the mood for right now. I got to get this.
Okay.
Or, my husband's out of town right now, so this is a good time for us, even though I'm just meeting. I'm planning on getting a divorce, so I want to do something different with somebody. Don't do it. I don't care how long it takes you until both of you are able to produce relatively close papers on the complete table of sexual transmitted diseases to include HIV, don't have sex. And even if you do have sex, still have protected sex.
Okay, okay. So no peer pressure, no I think he's too cute or she too cute that I don't want to lose him. Don't succumb to that.
We don't even want to go there.
Okay.
Okay? You want to remain strong. I express to all people who are sexually active, remain strong. Get some morals. Set some standards about yourself.
Mm-hmm. Because, you got to love you first. And when you really love you, you're going to think about, okay, I don't want to do nothing to hurt me.
Exactly.
Okay. Okay. You said that this whole virus is a genocide, and you related that to education and information. Elaborate on that.
When your people don't know, when I say social genocide, that goes for across the board, not just on a specific race of people.
Mm-hmm.
I was instructing the class about a month ago, and I had a young man, he says to me after class, he says, some of these things you said, mister, my girlfriend got this,
mm-hmm.
and I knew it because I seen these pictures. I didn't know what it was. I said, well, here's the information. Let her read it. Maybe you can get her to go to the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, he's 24 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He says to me, I cannot read.
Oh, wow.
Then I said, well, your girlfriend, give it to her. She can read. She can't read either. She's 21, she's 24, and they have two kids and can't read.
Wow.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's imperative for, like, people like yourself and myself to get this information out, because we have a lot of people who are illiterate, and socially, they're right around us.
Mm.
He was well-dressed kid, okay?
What'd you call
Looked
him?
Like,
what kind of kid?
He was well-dressed.
Okay.
I mean, he had on everything appropriate. Pants wasn't sagging or anything. Never would have thought he couldn't read. Looked like a college student to me.
You said something that, when we discussed this the other day, you said there's no protection when experimenting drunk. Explain that to the audience. What do you mean by that?
No protection when you're experimenting with drugs?
No, drunk.
Drunk. Okay, let me explain this. Alcohol depreciates the immune system faster than any drugs.
Really?
It makes the immune system drop down, so it makes your left wide open. I'm trying to keep it simple for the people who are listening.
Okay.
To become easily infected.
Really?
You would think because if somebody's shooting cocaine or heroin, no, study the record, alcohol is the fastest thing to make your immune system deplete. So you have these people say, I was drunk. And in the most of them drunk who have sex unprotected with someone, I would say on guesstimation, 40% of them become infected with something.
Holy, ouch. And what was the percentage, 40%?
That's my guesstimation.
A guesstimation about 40%.
Yes.
You said
that's an I statement. I want to make that clear.
Okay, that's Ed Jones' statement.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. You said that HIV and AIDS is not an epidemic, but it's a pandemic. Elaborate on that.
An epidemic is for an isolated area.
Okay.
A pandemic means it's nationwide, running rampant.
Wow.
So it's outside of the boundaries of a certain area.
So can we stop this pandemic, or is it too far gone?
I never think anything is too far gone. It's going to take a bunch of warriors. Our director at the agency where I work for said we're at war right now, the way the numbers have changed. So right now it's going to take some soldiers, some generals, and some sergeants, and some lieutenants, some commanding officers to get out there and explain what prevention is, teach them how easy it is to catch any of the sexual transmitted diseases, mainly HIV. Okay?
So why
so
do you...
Have...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
When I say a war, any time as much money has been spent and the numbers have not dropped it, that means we're going to have to get out there and really be get some soldiers in the streets.
Okay.
To teach, to educate, to warn, to make them beware. We're going to have to recruit some of the leaders. I call them generals. I speak of General Pastor So-and-so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? He's a general because he has a flock, which he calls himself a shepherd when he's teaching on Sunday. But that also is a platoon that he can give commands to, and they do listen to the pastors.
Well, let me ask you this. Speaking of that, why is it that in our churches, in our neighborhoods, this is the one subject that nobody wants to touch? I mean, this is like the Black Plague. Everybody runs when you start talking about AIDS and HIV. Why is it that it's like a taboo to discuss this when it's all over our community?
When you don't know how to discuss it appropriately, a lot of times silence is the killer.
Mm.
See, so we have so many of us don't want to be wrong. So we just accept what was told to us in the beginning back in the 80s. We don't want to be wrong. We don't want to have the people.
Wow. But see, but it's killing us, though. So to pull the covers over our head when we start talking about this, it's just, to me, it's just wrong because, you know, we're losing a whole generation. I mean, when I came out of high school, it wasn't, there was no cases of teenagers with AIDS, you know, or teenagers with HIV. It just wasn't happening. And so for it to be happening today, you just wonder how did that, I mean, how did we get from there to here? And what can we do?
Let me just cut you off briefly before we run out of time.
Okay, go ahead.
Let me ask you this. How many rules were you taught at home?
A lot. A lot.
Okay. You were even taught properly how to sit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You were taught how to wear your underwear in the correct manner.
Absolutely.
You have young women now don't even wear underwear.
This is true. To school.
Okay.
It's true.
And they don't mind sitting with their legs wide open like a man.
So you're saying it's the parents' fault?
I'm saying that not only is the community.
It's the community fault. Okay, gotcha.
Okay, but see, now we have to be careful that it does start at home.
Okay.
But if you see a young man or a young woman at this point, now you, we as adults have to be careful how we address them.
Hmm.
Because there's a chance we may be assaulted.
Yeah, because they don't want to hear that.
They don't want to hear it, and their parents are going to back them up. Mm-hmm. Why are you trying to tell my daughter about that? You trying to have sex with my daughter?
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't walk in on the door two or three times and first thing, well, let me take her down to Penny and Parenthood and get her some birth control so she won't have no babies. Well, what about some condoms so she won't catch no disease?
Mm-hmm.
Or for the young man.
But how much of this do we want to blame on the down low brother? I mean, how much do we want to say he has a whole lot to do with riding both sides of the fence in the middle, too?
Well, let me make this clear for information and research, okay, because I don't know any down low brothers, and I don't practice myself.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, we have become too casual with sex.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when they say down low, now, I'm going to look at the brothers who were previous drug users who've never been tested, who's infected, okay? Because the common term is, okay, as long as my girl's okay, but you've just been dating this woman 6 months.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
You've been shooting dope for 10 years, and nobody know but you, okay? And then four is a down low. To me, and I hope I'm not charged up for this, I consider them also in the MSM group. I don't separate them.
MSM, what is that?
Men who have sex with men.
Okay, okay. So they're they're in the gay male group.
Ed Jones, okay?
Okay, Ed Jones said that. I didn't say Ed. Okay, gotcha. So
okay,
who is...
See, I have to take accountability for some of the things I say, and I hope I haven't offended anyone.
I think you. I think what we're doing, though, we're just keeping it real, and we're saying what other people aren't saying. So I don't think. I think if anyone is taking offense, and I apologize if y'all are, but I think what we're doing is really just saying what everybody else is thinking and just not saying. And it's been a subject that I wanted to deal with for a long time because I have a passion for it because I think. The thing that is scariest to me is that it's preventable. How can we be getting something at this rate when we can stop it? We actually can prevent it. I mean, if we just take control of our own lives.
And let me share something with you. What bothers me sometimes, I'm invited to come out and talk about the diseases to the young and old in certain places. I'm told I cannot give a condom out.
Wow.
And that's hypocritical to me.
Wow.
If I'm teaching you prevention and I can't offer you anything, there is a number of people who have never tried a condom.
Oh, my goodness.
I've had some professional women. I work at some of the probation centers here in Dallas, and they never have ever seen a female condom until I bring one out for them to look at.
So, go ahead.
They say, a female condom? I didn't even know females had condoms. I have some of the guys who engage in the anal oral sex. They didn't even know what a dental dam was. That's a barrier between you and the anus in which you're engaging in. And the female condom is one of the better condoms because it's made out of polyurethane. It doesn't have any holes, and she can wear it up to 8 hours prior to having sex.
Oh, wow. And so I guess if someone was interested in that kind of information, it's not something you're going to go into the store and say, excuse me, can you tell me where the dental dam is, because it's going to bring attention to you that you don't want. And so I guess because of that stigma, people don't ask.
Well, this is what we got to break.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The taboo is killing us.
Yeah, that's true.
That is absolutely causing us to lose a grip on something that we need to work on. I was at a meeting in Dallas the other day, and the group that's over the syphilis elimination, one of their things is to try to bring Dallas out of the top numbers. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of intern college students who are working. We have the condom ladies who go out in and everywhere that's over at Urban League. Their name is the condom ladies.
Mm.
Lisa and Toya. They work in and everywhere, all types of condoms. See, our people are not familiar.
Mm.
Is there a condom to go anywhere in your community? not promoting them.
Mm-hmm.
But you got guys who buy cigarette tobacco shops, but we don't have them buying condom shops.
So before we close, we really want to put it out there. Who is most at risk of being infected?
Any person from any age of any race who have unprotected sex and does not know their partner's status.
Mm. So it's crossing all color lines, all ages, all denominations. It's
a unified virus that's attacking any human that's acting out with somebody who's infected.
Okay. So in closing then, Mr. Jones, what would you want to say to an audience of people that really were kind of living life like they didn't think they could die? What would you say to them about being sexually active and being promiscuous out there and not really paying attention to how to protect themselves? What would you tell them?
Well, the simple thing I can do for them right now in a short period of time, get you some condoms.
Get you some condoms. Okay.
And use them.
Okay. Would you say education? I mean, how would they educate themselves on the subject matter?
Well, you can go online, look at Center Disease and Control, or they can contact you and we can set up something for your area. I have what they call a DFW Educational Task Force.
Mm-hmm.
And we're able to come out and educate, even train and certify people to teach in your community.
Okay, if they wanted to contact you about coming out to speak to their groups or contact you by email or telephone, well, how could they reach you?
They can reach me at edjonesii@yahoo.com.
Okay, repeat that one more time.
edjonesii@yahoo.com.
Okay.
I'm going to give you an alternative email.
Okay, sure. Go
which
ahead.
Which would be HIV Town Hall 2010.
Okay, you got to speak up a little bit. We couldn't hear that.
That would be HIV Town Hall 2010@gmail.com.
Okay.
That's wrong, at hotmail.com. Please forgive me.
Start again.
Okay, that would be HIV Town Hall 2010@hotmail.com.
Okay. For listeners out there today who maybe have not been tested and maybe something that we said made them think, well, maybe I should do that. Maybe I should go and be tested. Give our listening audience an idea of where they can go to be tested Monday morning.
Where the nearest health department?
The nearest health department.
And if you're too far from your health department, if you're in Dallas, I can recommend AIDS Arms, which is 219 Sunset. I can recommend in Fort Worth, which would be AOC in Fort Worth on Beach Street.
So if you are really interested in being tested, there is really no reason that you can't find a facility that can get you tested next week.
And please, there are a number of other agencies. I'm not trying to look over any of the agencies. I just didn't have time to give a list.
Mm-hmm.
But you can go to 211. Just dial 211 and tell them you want an HIV test. And give them your zip code or go in and give your zip code and get the nearest testing place close to you.
Okay, so 211 in any city or state?
Yes.
Okay. Well, y'all, this has been informative. I've learned a lot. I hope you've learned a lot. I want to say thank you to Mr. Ed Jones for coming and sharing this information with us. Hopefully it will save a life. And we're going to have him come back at a later date to give us updates from time to time on what we need to know as things continue to happen in our community and any information that he feels will be informative to us. This will end this edition of Center Stage. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.